Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
どこにいるのかな。見えない。
あ、
ここ
What's good, internet? Welcome to Vice City, aka Vice Gaming's new gaming podcast, all about gaming. It's me, Austin Walker.
We love games.
We love games. Patrick Klepek also here. Literally, the only people in this room right now are me and Patrick and Danica.
And the Joy-Con boys.
And the Joy-Con boys, which we've been watching all day. This truly is Vice Gaming's new podcast. This is the click.
This is pre-Waypoint. Fall 26. No, 17.
No.
No, 16.
2016.
Fall 2016.
We just need to get Mike Diver on a phone. Shout out to Mike Diver. Miss Mike Diver.
He seems to be doing all right.
He's doing all right. He's doing some PR stuff.
He's doing music stuff,
which is great.
Repping games in the UK.
Let me tell you, Mike Diver's music taste is fucking incredible. So,
shout out
to Mike Diver. I miss Mike. We're here at E3 Day Zero at this point.
Yeah.
That's actually not. We're actually still in the past. We're in Day Negative 1 when we're
recording this. We experience these things on Day Negative 1.
Well, we experience them in Day Negative... Day negative.
That was yesterday.
You're right. That was day negative one.
Both these were yesterday.
On day zero.
Oh.
We're releasing on
day
one.
These are going on day one. We experienced a day negative one.
Yes.
Okay, that makes sense.
We gotta get it all together. Ooh. Ha.
So yeah, this is opening the podcast that you'll hear on day zero. So our reactions to the first day of the show.
Yep.
We'll come after this.
Yeah.
This is reactions to, we saw the Nintendo Direct early,
yeah.
And we had a chance to go see the new From Software game.
Sekiro Shadows Die Twice.
So Tenchu Shadows Die Twice
on Vice City.
I'm going to keep forgetting the actual name of this, and I'm going to just call it Tenchu.
We should have named this podcast Vice City. We should have convinced Rockstar to let us name it Vice City.
We should have just called it Vice City.
And make them.
make them just say, hey, take it down, and then go... Because it would have been much cooler
to put it up. Let me tell you, that would have been the Vice move.
To say, just put it up, and then Rockstar says, you can't do that.
Yeah.
And then go, all right, cool, we'll change the name. And then it's Waypoint Radio. But you know what?
It was
what this was called.
It would be acast.com/ Vice City instead of
Vice Gaming's new podcast.
So we are going to talk about those games today. We're going to do a regular podcast tonight. The night that you're hearing this, there will be another podcast coming out that will be about...
We'll have seen Cyberpunk 2077, hopefully. We'll
played Anthem.
Played Anthem.
I've seen Ghost of I knew this a second ago. I wrote it down a second ago. Fuck. I've been saying it all weekend, no problem.
Now the new game from Sucker Punch.
The new Sucker Punch game. Goats.
Tsushima?
Goats, I said. Goats.
Goats of Tsushima?
Tsushima.
Tsushima?
Tsushima. There's
oh, right.
There's a K in there. Silent. Yeah. Tsushima. It's a little bit of a T. Anyway, take you back to Japanese class. Well, I've seen some other stuff.
There's something I'm seeing that morning. I don't know if I'm allowed to say I'm seeing it, but I'm excited to see what it is.
You've seen it. I don't even remember what you're seeing.
I can't tell you on this podcast. You have to bleep it. It's the thing I'm seeing at 11:30.
Oh, I'm so curious about what that is.
Yeah.
So tune in tonight to see what that
maybe
is.
Maybe it's at the Sony press conference, and then
people will
have a better sense of what that is, or I don't know.
Also, that day, Danica is seeing Destiny 2, so we'll have Danica talk about Destiny 2, and we'll have, by that day, I mean today, with the day you're hearing this, and then I think Rob is seeing Mutant Year Zero, and there's some other stuff happening, so we'll talk about some other stuff later. But for now, we're going to talk about the Nintendo Direct that went up this morning. We saw it the other day. We got some hands-on time with Super Smash Brothers Ultimate. We should talk through the... And then we're going to talk about Sekiro. So if you don't care about Nintendo, just jump ahead like 30 minutes probably. Yeah. And maybe even less than that. And you'll hear us talking about ninjas and shit. And you'll be like,
okay.
I got to go backwards.
We got to get through seconds. Nintendo to earn our right to talk about the new From Software
game. Nintendo.
No, I know. I fucking love Nintendo.
Me too.
We were just playing our Switch, playing through... talking about Yoku's Island Express just before we recorded this.
They stole my Switch. I couldn't find my Switch. So I was just telling
Who's
Danica,
they?
I don't know.
The Joy-Con boys?
The Joy-Con boys. No, I was like, you know what would be a real good... I lost my Switch for like 20 minutes. And I was like, oh, it's just gone. I don't know where it is.
That's scary.
I knew I didn't take it with me anywhere yesterday.
That's scarier than a phone, because a phone, you can like go to your computer and like find my iPhone. There's no find my Switch.
Which is extra scary because I have Mario Tennis on there.
Oh, no.
And so I was like, did someone sneak in and all they took was one of our Switches? And then tonight they're going to come back and take like
another
just the laptop or another Switch. And we're going to have like the last
They know there's three Switches in here.
Three microphones are gone. You know? You know, people...
It's not like Giant Bomb. They're not going to steal all the equipment. They're just going to kind of drive us up a wall wondering why it's just small pieces of equipment missing.
Exactly.
They're going to take a USB cable.
And that's it. That's it.
But like one that was really important.
From the volume.
An XLR cable is going to go away.
Exactly. Nintendo Direct.
Yeah.
Comes on. What's the first thing you see? What's the first thing you see?
So we were not sitting next to each other.
No.
I was sitting next to Steven Sutil over at Kotaku catching up with him.
I tried to make eye contact with you. I leaned forward and looked. And I didn't see you. And then you texted me and said...
I think just Mex in all capitals.
I think Mex. No, LMAO, Mex.
Mex.
And then I texted you back an image of my notebook, my notes app. I wrote Mex in all caps, and then I wrote cel-shaded-ish. Because it has like a little bit of some outline shit going on there.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, the first like 45 seconds of this direct is just like some good-looking... Ass Max, and then it ends with
Demon X Machina.
Demon X Machina, which is
fantastic.
And the way like the logo takes up the screen is like Demon X Machina. Like it's very, and the music playing over the bit is like very heavy metal. Mm-hmm. Like it's extremely good.
Marvelous is the dev.
Okay. What do they do?
They've done some other.
I know like they're like a JRPG dev. Company.
Good question. Good question. Here's a good question. Here we go. I got some game lists here. Let's see what they made for the Xbox 360.
Yeah.
Oh no, they're a publisher. So I actually don't know who devved it because they published.
What have they published? At least maybe give us.
Oh, so they published Deadly Premonition in North America.
Right.
They published No More Heroes, Heroes Paradise in 2010.
Okay.
Half Minute Hero they made. They've made some arcade.
So maybe they're
games.
Making this game.
They could be making this game. They have made games.
We don't
they
have a
made games in a while though, according to what I'm looking at.
Nintendo didn't give us a copy of the direct, so
yeah,
we're,
so
go,
we're going
a little
off
go, notes
a
and
bit.
Like what
yeah.
we.
But so that was the mechs looked great. The missiles looked dope as shit.
Didn't get a sense of like what that game was.
There's a bad
though?
Song.
Is it an action game?
It looked like an action game.
Probably.
It looked. Game. It reminded me of some. It reminded me of Armored Core 4 and 4 Answer, which are like the very fast paced Armored Core games.
Because those were slower earlier in the series.
So one.
Right?
1, 2, and 3 chunkier. Are like a little chunkier. 1's very chunky. 2 and 3 get a little bit faster. 4 is just like go super fast. And then 5 brought it back down to like tactical, slow combat.
Is 5 a PS3 game?
5 is a PS3 game. Mm. Yeah. This reminded me a lot of 4. So was 4.
Oh,
4
okay.
and 5 both came out.
1, 2, 3, PS2. Well, yeah. 1 was PS1.
1 was PS1. Master Arena.
That's probably the last one I played was the first one.
Yeah. 4 is really cool. 4 is very high flying. This reminded me of 4, especially 4 Answer, which had a bunch of like... huge scale bosses, and then you were fast little mechs, and so it was lots of like dashing around this giant, you know, walking tank in the desert and like shooting things. This had like that vibe. In fact, the designs looked a lot like Armored Core. I'm curious who the
what if FromSoftware made
is.
A tactics game.
That'd be dope.
What if they took the Souls gameplay
yeah,
and made
good.
A tactics game? Like, not to jump ahead to our ninja game, but like, what if that game was just a tactics
that'd
game
really
and the
cool.
perspective was overhead?
I would play that.
Yeah,
I would
right?
Play that, or like a Final Fantasy Tactics isometric.
You get like stamina and like, you know, all that sort of stuff. Like this, like
I'm shocked no one's built that on phones as like I like a lot of roguelikes like Hoplite, which are very like, they're not stamina based, but they are resource management heavy.
Right.
I would love that to be.
Someone,
that.
Just FromSoftware, they're not going
to
do
I'd
that.
I'd also add mechs to it because this looked good.
Yeah.
I just think this was co-op is my vibe. I have no idea for sure.
Square, where's Front Mission?
So yeah.
We're not going to talk about that right now.
We already talked about it. You already heard us complain yesterday.
Yikes.
Yeah, yikes was my tweet. So Front Mission wasn't there. So, like, I do feel like this is the year of the mech. I do feel like we're seeing a lot of mechs this year. We had Battletech come out already. We had Into the Breach come out already. MechWarrior 5 is coming out later this year.
Mm-hmm.
We had this game, Demon X Machina, on stage. We had mechs at another press conference yesterday. What was the other mech?
Mechs at Anthem.
Anthem has little mechs. Has exosuits.
Fallout has mechy, sort of, I guess, power suits.
Power suits. I mean, the history of mechs is tied very closely with the history of power armor because of Starship Troopers. Starship right. Troopers is one of the influences on early real robot design. Anyway, I'm not going to get into it. There were mechs right away at Nintendo, and I was like, yeah, mechs. So, and then there was another game that has mechs in it, but they're not the star, which is Xenoblade Chronicles 2 DLC.
Right.
Torna, the Golden Country was the name of the DLC. I didn't finish Xenoblade Chronicles 2. I had a fondness for it. I enjoyed what I played of it, outside of the, like, super misogynistic designs of some of the characters.
But it's like a JRPG.
It's a JRPG, like, very warm, very, like...
It was misogynistic in the ways you expect lots of JRPGs to sort of be.
It went a step further, I'd say, in some of the designs. But what, what I'll say is, as characters, there are, like, some dope women characters in that game who have great writing and really great voice acting. Some of the voice acting in that game was fantastic. Seeing this and hearing some of the main themes made me want to find another 70 hours to go back and play Xenoblade Chronicles 2. That's out in September. It's like a lot of the main characters of that game going after Malos, who is one of the big bads of that original game. It looked like you were playing as a different character. You weren't playing as like the main dude. You're playing as, I think, one of the female characters, which is like, yeah, I'm here for that. I'm here for like a perspective change.
Monolith is putting out those games at a surprising clip.
Yes. And I don't know what the scale of this thing is. And I actually don't know if it's standalone.
Probably
DLC
big. Because look, even a small expansion for them would be like 40 hours long. Right.
Exactly. Even if it's 10 hours, even if it's 20 hours, that's a lot to add. Then I had a Smash. Was there like another Smash tease?
Well, there was Tales of...
Oh, it was Tales of...
Xena. I have Tales of question mark.
That was Xenoblade.
Was it? Oh, so that I think was, that was me speculating what it was. It was not. It looked like a Tales game. Gotcha. Okay. September 2018. They showed really a little bit more Pokemon Let's Go, Pikachu, right. And Pikachu Let's Go Eevee.
They talked about...
I haven't played one of those games in a long-ass time. I probably haven't played a proper Pokemon game since, like... Actually, like Red, Blue, and like whatever the ones were right after that. Okay. Like, I didn't really get into the DS ones.
Why you didn't try?
No, I tried. I like Pokemon. It just didn't really grab me. But this one looks. I like the art style. Mm-hmm. Like, I think it looks like clean and nice.
This is not the big Pokemon game people are waiting.
No,
for.
They've already explicitly stated that's coming
next year.
Yeah, next holiday. Like the visual overhaul. Like what a next gen Pokemon game. The Pokemon game that theoretically people have been talking about for like 15 years.
Right,
like, what if they made Pokemon for the N64, the GameCube,
the Wii U? Yeah.
Like, it sounds like the game next year is going to be that game. Mm-hmm. 3DS is going to be pretty long in the tooth at that point. Mm-hmm. So I wouldn't be shocked if there was a version of it for like a handheld, but I also wouldn't be shocked if they just said, actually, the future is Pokemon Go and, Gen 9 or whatever.
So, I mean, this is Pokemon Let's Go. You can bring stuff between Pokemon Go and this.
It is really smart.
Thing, which is smart. There's a lot of people who love Pokemon Go and who have not played a mainline Pokemon game. I get this as a bridge for them. They're still, I mean, this is the conversation we've been having all week with Anthem, with Fallout 76. How do you cater to two different types of fans? How do you let your fans know that the core fans who want that hardcore experience that is like the past experiences they've had, how do you let them know that you're still thinking of them? This didn't do it necessarily.
Well, no, but they did it in a different way. They show the big trailer that's like, here's the splashy thing, fans get confused, and then the hardcore fans that do the research go online, find out the Pokemon companies put out a statement saying like, hey, like
the big one's coming,
and like that's how you get people to like go, okay, fine, I was still probably gonna buy this one anyway.
The biggest announcement yesterday by far, Super Mario Party.
With a reboot.
Is that
drop the numbers, baby. What was the last
Super
one?
Mario
10?
Not Mario Party.
Did they go past 10?
Super Mario Party. Do you see?
Yeah. It's better.
It's better. Super.
Oh.
You can put
What's the last one they got to?
13.
13.
Final Fantasy 13.
Oh, they said
versus?
Final Fantasy determines what's a bridge too far in numbers. Mario Party made it to 13. It said, well, Final Fantasy hasn't gone any further, but they have. They made it to 15.
Yeah. Mario
Party. Mario had room to grow.
11? 11 is the Switch one. Was the Switch one?
No. There's not been one on Switch.
What?
There's not been a Mario Party yet.
Okay, is this it? This is the one? Sorry, I was on FantendoWikia.com.
Oh, it's... Hey, Joy-Con boys, can you...
Hey, Joy-Con boys. Yeah, that's... I guess that was not announced. So, yeah. Mario Party 10, then, is the most recent one.
Okay. And that was a Wii U game.
They're doing Mario Party the Top 100, which is, or was, a Nintendo 3DS, like, minigame collection.
Okay.
The Top 100. All right. So, this is the first Mario Party for Switch. They came out of the gate with that trailer to be like, yo, you're going to do some shit with your Switches. because it was, remember, it was like combat, like the tank combat game.
Yeah, they were actually like lining up Switches together. In different ways. And like, and part of that was like, the way it was like, so you would take the Joy-Cons off the Switch, you would lay them on the table, and then there was a, like an element of strategy where like the layout on your Switch, like you wanted to, it was too hard to kind of determine exactly what was happening, but basically you were like, there was a reason to line the Switches up next to each other in different ways, and then you could like swipe your finger across the Switches to like initiate sort of a shot or some sort of sequence. But basically, like, they're turning like the Switch itself and the physical hardware design into like some sort of kind of accessory.
Level, yeah,
and like,
which
you're
is cool.
I don't know how many people have a chance to like actually interact with the games in that way. There was also a cool one where
we have three Switches in this room, right?
Yeah, we could do that.
And also, like, I want to be clear, I think more people than we expect would, which is like, the Switch is not cheap by any means. But if I was a parent, I could probably afford to get like a Switch sooner than I can get an Xbox One X.
Yeah, that's probably, you know? And also, yeah, it's a more utilitarian device.
I just carry around with you.
Yes.
And like, yeah, me and my friends, like high school Austin would have had a Switch, and me and my friend Jeremy absolutely would have done all this Mario Party shit.
There was another one where like they, there was a baseball mini game.
Yes.
And so they had the Switches sort of like, you know, propped up, you know, it was four players, like them facing one another, and they're like, kind of sneaking off to the side to figure out like which pitch, to,
pitch
throw.
To throw,
and like it was a.
I like their millennials.
They,
I think that they capture something that feels genuine to me.
Yes,
as like a little corny.
Starting with the original Switch promotional video, it's like all these things have a certain corny attitude to them because it's a marketing video, but Nintendo, in line with, I think, Nintendo as a company and an ethos, was like, it was very earnest.
Yeah.
And like, it's very much like, what we hope people are doing. This is our actual vision for this product.
Yep.
And they seem to have carried that through, like, with stuff like this. It made me want to play Mario Party.
Me too. Which, like, there's a moment in that trailer where they show all the cool shit, and then they go from that to be like, it's a Mario Party board, and they're playing lots of Mario Party minigames. Like, my note there was, oh, also it's Mario Party. Right. Then we got Fire Emblem Three Houses, which I think you were a little colder on than me.
Largely the aesthetic. I guess I was just expecting a little more from, like in what in the same way people were talking about or expectations for Pokemon, like for the jump, like, hey, with like, it's a console Pokemon. I guess I was just expecting a little more from what the game looks like. I mean, it's fine. It's sort of like the cel-shaded aesthetic that, you know, you would probably expect for that leap, because they're not going to go like in a realistic dimension.
No. There was stuff there that was cool for me, which was like,
and it may be that blown up on an enormous screen,
it
looks
it
worse
look
than like
when
I'm actually playing it like on my Switch, it'll actually like look better.
I liked seeing running around a 3D environment as like third person to explore like the city your character is in or whatever. That was just like JRPG style.
Yeah.
That's neat. I'm sure that a lot of that will still be able to be menu driven, so that way you don't have to run around that city to go like upgrade your troops or whatever. I liked seeing troops. Like, that was a neat, that to me was the big
difference. Yeah, it's not just 1v1. It's like, I mean, it can be like 1v a group of archers or something like that, but it's like, yeah, you're kind of, it feels like you're commanding an army.
Yes.
Even though you're really just probably doing the same thing you're doing in Fire Emblem,
it
really
just
is just
a visualization of oh, Lin isn't just a good swordswoman. She's also commanding a group. Lin wasn't in this, to be clear. There's another character, but I'm just pulling it. Marth, you know, Fire Emblem character, Roy, Ike, all, you know, Sorin.
My boys.
Donald.
My girls.
Isn't
Donald?
Just alone with a pitchfork.
He's got an army boys with buckets.
The Bucket Boys.
That's Wet Bucket Boys.
Follow us at youtube.com/Bucket Boys. You spell that the way you know how to spell it.
If ice thing doesn't work out, I've got a backup.
I got a backup. We're going to about
the Bucket Boys.
The question bucket. We got all sorts of buckets. Bucket Boys. I wrote that good anime shit that gives me chills down. Their formations.
Oh, the cutscenes? Like, or just like...
I'm just that person where it's just like the music swells and like, all right, I'm here.
Here's this life god coming down
to sing with a heart.
Hang out with
the
human affairs.
Yeah, exactly. Spring 2019 for that, which, sure.
They've got... The one thing I'll say, and something they're managing better than they ever did on the Wii U, which... Partially, I wonder if this is because a lot of these games were in development for the Wii U, pushed to Switch, and then suddenly you have like a lineup that you can release a game in the spring and the fall in a very un-Nintendo way because these games were not necessarily meant for this hardware. But like, there's something kind of for everyone between the indie stuff, between the stuff Nintendo's doing.
We're about to see the next thing, which is for as many people as you can imagine.
Right.
Fortnite.
Yeah.
Battle Royale. Out today.
Everyone knows this because of Chance.
Chance the Rapper already tweeted it. Except
he just wrote Fortnite TMW
tomorrow. Yeah, exactly. Fortnite tomorrow on Switch, and it's like, Chance, Chano.
How did that happen? Was he in one? He was not like, he didn't like go get a wristband at the LA Convention Center.
If he was, that would be, what if we just looked over our left and Chance was there and he was kicking my ass at Smash Brothers?
I could see it.
Fucking just dropped his ad lib in there.
I mean, whatever. I saw him at a like Dave and Buster's type place. I feel like I told this story. Probably I saw him playing DDR.
Oh yeah, you did. Was he good?
Yeah, he was really good. Fuck, that's and I so wanted good. To go over and do the. He was with like a bunch of kids and his friends, and I was like, okay. I'm gonna. I am not Chance the Rapper, but I understand people coming up to me. Yes. And I was like,
you should write him an email.
You can just write him an email.
We'll figure it out.
Does he have an email?
We work with music people.
Oh, okay. MusicPeople@vice.com.
Noisy.
What's Chance's? No Trey. Give me Chance's email.
We've done that shit before.
Okay.
You know.
He was good at DDR.
He's good at DDR. There's a story there.
He was doing the thing where, like,
I should have told you. Why pass Austin? You should have told all of this to Patrick then. We would have had this story on the site by now.
Well, I made the decision. My wife was like, we should go say something to him. I was like, no. We're not going to do it. We're not going to do that. And then she just slyly took out her phone and did the pinch to zoom and took a video of him. Like, we need proof. I was like, that's true. Right. We do need proof.
Did you see the Vince Staples PUBG thing?
No.
I think it was Vince Staples. This is a different PUBG tweet. He was basically like, when y'all are done with fucking Fortnite, you come get me. Like, and we can play some real games like PUBG. Which is extremely good.
I think it's going to be huge on Switch. Yeah. I think there's going
to
be
Free Today is a very good Beyonce moment for a game that's that big on a platform that's big.
And I think there's probably a crossover between like folks that play it on mobile and then may also have access to a Switch, and Switch is going to be a much better way to play that game than it is on your phone or iPad.
Yeah. I will play it there. I'll fuck around with it.
I'm excited to have that game just sort of available because that's a way in which I may dick around with like new modes in that game in a way that when I'm sitting down for like PC time, like
you're in a mode.
I want to play something a little different than that.
Yes. Then we went to here's a note. Two notes.
Yeah.
Talk about indie games is coming up. That's what we're about to talk about. There's a blast.
800 indie games.
Did they say that?
No, but it sure felt like it.
It did feel like that. I couldn't keep up with the things that were being coming out around that. But here's a note that I did make is Reggie said, thank you to our independent developers at a Nintendo Direct. To the broad swath of indie devs who have helped fill that fucking store with games that you should play. And that to me is super interesting. And we've talked about this because it contrasts with the conversation I had with Reggie last year. I went to Reggie last year. You can find this on the site. And I said, hey, I've spoken to some indie devs, and I had at the event who felt ignored by Nintendo because none of them were mentioned. There were no indie games in the Switch Nintendo Direct last year. And they knew at that point that even at that point, the indie games are some of the best things on the Switch. Mm-hmm. Independent developers were like busting their ass because there was a cool new platform to play with that people were excited about. And Reggie told me then, like, oh, we don't think E3 is the place for independent games. We think PAX is going to be the place for that because that's where a little more hardcore gamers are. That's where like the audience would understand.
It's an argument. Like it's not. It's,
I said okay.
It's not bullshit.
What I told him then was I'll hold you to that. Like I want to see what you do at PAX. Like show me the love there.
Right.
And then they did. And I was like, hey, you know what? I told him later in another conversation, like, nice. Yep, you did the thing. But it's so fascinating to this year go from last year where people were a handful of indie devs who I spoke to, more than a handful, less than a gaggle, less than a bucket. You know, of indie devs were like, man, come on, Nintendo. To being on screen and saying thank you to the independent developers. That means something. We talked the other day about what the value of morale is in this industry. Right. And like, cool, awesome, good shout out there. And then they showed us some stuff, including Overcooked 2,
yep,
which I played at Judges Week and I couldn't talk about until now.
Looks like more Overcooked.
You can throw stuff. That's really fun. It's really fun to be like, yo, I need an eggplant. And I was like, whack, throw that fucking eggplant. You would catch it and like turn around and drop it and chop it. Drop it and shop it. Our new show on Viceland. You drop acid and then
Now it's
Viceland.
Eggplants.
Eggplants. Mm. Winking. That looked cool. Killer Queen Black.
Yeah, have you played Killer Queen?
I played Killer Queen once and I didn't understand it. Because I was playing with people who were better than me at Killer Queen.
Yeah, that's not the way to play Killer Queen. Right. Most people probably don't know what this game is.
Which is why it's wild that it was on that screen. And Reggie was like the critically acclaimed,
for like
classic,
a couple thousand people that have played this game.
Right.
It's probably more than that, but it's an arcade machine that was specially made It supports up to 8 or 10 players, something like that. And it's meant to be played, like, it's meant to be played with a full slate of people.
Right.
Like, the whole idea, the reason they made it an arcade game was that the community, like, the camaraderie, the rivalry of in-person people, was a huge part of, like, the pitch. Like, the reason it was an arcade game was because they wanted
people
that sensation.
The
didn't want voice chat.
Gotcha.
In the original, like, version of that game.
But that was like a decade ago. It was like 8 years ago or something. It was like 2010, 2011 when I first started hearing about that game.
And it's a really tremendously fun competitive game.
How many players? It's like 5-on-5 or something like that.
Yeah, I don't know. I didn't know like what if they've changed it. I think it was 4-on-4 before. And you know, like you play like worker bees, and then there's a queen who's like really powerful. You're trying to take out the queen, but the queen is also like really. The player plays the queen, and like the queen in the right hands, it can just devastate an entire army. So there's this really interesting push and pull, and like there's resource collection that's happening at the same time. So you're balancing between like building up your resources and upgrading your bees to like going out on the offensive and like trying to take out the other worker bees. It sounds simple, but there's a speed to it that is just like relentless and anxiety inducing in like a very good way. And like on the Switch, especially, I mean, they said it's what's Switch, but my understanding is it's going to come to other stuff at some point.
Mm-hmm.
I'm glad that more people are going to be able to play that game outside of the arcades.
Totally.
But it is going to be a game that I think is like, it'll be fine online, but it is very much a game that is like rewards players for like playing it in person with one another.
Right, totally. So I'm curious to see how that comes out. Hollow Knight out today.
So excited.
Finally,
I've been
putting off playing that
game because I heard, as someone that like really likes Metroid inspired games, Dark Souls inspired games, I heard that Hollow Knight was like this really interesting mixture of the two. It's a gorgeous, like,
it looks really good.
Like, it's just really, really special. And I played maybe like half an hour of it back when it came out and was like, oh, this seems interesting. And then just put it aside for whatever reason, like a million other games. And then around the time when I think like Game of the Year stuff was happening, people were saying like, hey, you need to check out Hollow Knight. This seems like super up your alley. But at that point, I had heard about the Switch version and was just like, I think I'm just going to wait for that version. And like, that'll be the way that I play the game. So I'm super excited that between Fortnite and Hollow Knight, like those are two pretty good, like, hey, out today. Yeah, there you go.
I got both nights covered. And then we got Octopath Traveler. There will be a June 14th demo, a new demo.
That game comes out July 13th, so it's not far off.
I was just telling earlier today, I was like, today of recording, we were just watching the bad Square Enix conference.
Yes.
The week.
The bad, bad.
Bad is probably strong. Weak. Lackluster.
Mm-hmm.
Bad.
Bad.
I was like, oh yeah, Octopath's coming out soon. I'll probably just wait for that unless the demo does the thing of like,
oh, carryover.
Some cool carryover, or you get a bonus job class.
That seems like a Square Enix thing to do.
Yeah. So that looks, it has a good look. I haven't played that first demo. I heard there was some interesting bad shit maybe in there with some of the characters, but
I mean, that original demo was put out less, the way it seemed to be framed was, yes, it was a demo, but it was also more of like,
a showcase.
Hey, like, what do you, and also like, what do you think of this game? Because that was like a full year ago when that demo came out. I think that was like, to some degree, it was like, you know, player feedback, like more of a beta than any like actual beta.
It's such a cool,
it's very pretty
look. It's like, you know, pixel art characters in a 3D pixel art world, almost like Paper Mario style.
Yeah, very.
It's almost like
good use
Fantasy
of shadows, like with the
and light. Yeah,
yeah.
Good color palette. Not just like not bright and cartoonish. Almost like, what's the word I'm looking for? Not sun swept, but like sun bleached almost,
Right? Yeah.
Like it looks like there's a
lot of color drain. Like color was
a little
there.
Desaturated, but there was color once. Yeah,
yeah,
it's interesting. Then we got this huge list of games.
Captain Toad,
July 13th,
also yes. July 13th.
Dragon Ball Fighter Z.
It's going to have new content, apparently.
Yes, you're a big
they announced
fan of
that. It before. Yeah, Captain Toad is a, there are a lot of deeply underrated, and mostly underrated because just not as many people own a Wii U, but Captain Toad is a superb puzzle game, and I'm excited to play it a second. Like I wasn't going to play it again, but now there's new content, so it's like, all right, I guess I want to play
it
again.
I never played it before, and it seems very much like my type of puzzle. Like, that style of puzzle box, like, platformer is, it does scratch an itch for me.
And it's you know, in a strong tradition of Nintendo games where the collection part is, like, a really strong suit of it.
Right,
like, there's a deep reward for curiosity, rather than just collectibles for collectibles' sake. Like, right. It is. Like, I mean, it functions for stuff you can unlock, but the sheer active in collecting is a reward because the way they hide it in the levels is, like, such a delight.
That is the game. Yes. That is the – all right, totally. Starlink showed up, so we'll probably see that – you and I will probably see that tonight at Ubisoft.
Right.
The night we're recording this. Not the night
Which is like out. A Toys to Life game.
That's a toy, right? It was a Toys to Life game at the very least where you put a – like a – You built like a little ship, like a little space ship, like a space fighter, and attached it to. They showed this last year to like a PS4 controller, and you could like pull things off of it. And I like, you're like, oh, I need my torpedoes. You could add them or whatever. And that was cool then. That this little quick shot didn't show any of the Toys to Life stuff. So we'll
just
see if
like
that,
some space shooter
stuff.
That
I'm curious. And by the time we're saying this out loud, you'll have already known probably from Yubi mm-hmm. of me being like, hey, is there actually any of that stuff in that game? Is that Toys of Life still part of that? Or is it just a space shooter now?
Right.
We'll see. Minecraft, Dragon Kong, Dragon Kong, Donkey Kong plus Rabbids added to Mario plus Rabbids. Cool. Carcassonne, really great.
That seems like a really good board game. Seems like a really good fit for the Switch, generally speaking.
Pixel Arc or whatever, and Arc.
That's like a Minecrafty take on Arc, right?
It's a Cube Worldy take on Arc.
Well, okay. Well, if Cube World's never going to shift, then someone else might as well.
Wolfram Von Funk came out and was like, "I've been working on Pixel Arc. I changed Cube World into this. It exists now. Go buy it." Wasteland 2 felt like a weird.
That was announced a while ago.
I had no idea. That's interesting. I never played those games. I would like to play those games.
I didn't. I heard. I remember.
Switch is the right platform for it, but
I asked some people when that game came out. You know, given that I liked the Fallout games, but like the modern Fallout games, I haven't played Fallout 1 and 2. But I was like, oh, like I mentioned those worlds. I was like, I like some X. Like, I like. He was like, does that fit within the kind of thing I like? And the general impression I got was it's like an extremely hardcore game. Yes. Like this is a old school, like no
pure
hold barred,
RPG
and
of the Fallout 1 and 2 variety,
right? And I was sort of told, like, I don't think you'll have a good time with it. So,
Rob and I might, So,
I'd be curious what you guys think. It was interesting because
I never got around to it on PC.
It was hard to tell if people, I don't want to say people, was that game actually good, or was it just sort of shocking that it came to exist around the time when crowdfunding was still so novel, and the idea that a Wasteland 2 could even appear, because it's like that sort of game hadn't existed in a long ass time. And so it's like, was that a good one of those, or was there some, like, you know, some nostalgia glasses on there?
Because the thing is, there was
they're making another one.
I thought they were
Wasteland 3, right?
Is Wasteland 3 the new one, or is that how that worked, or is there already a second one?
No, I think Wasteland 3 is the one they were raising money on
again.
Fig, right? I think Wasteland 3 is the thing.
I think you're right. I think you're right. Wasteland 2 was the one that got released from...
Yeah, that was a Kickstarter game.
There weren't two Kickstarter games?
Well, that's... In Exile raised money for another game on Kickstarter.
That was not Wasteland.
Which is Bard's Tale.
Okay.
And then Wasteland 3 was on Fig.
Gotcha.
But that hasn't been shown for
a couple
years.
Cool. All right. So, some other things. Fallout Shelter... Paladins. World Ends With You. I'm excited about coming.
People that like World Ends With You really like World Ends With
You. It's really good. I didn't finish it.
It's one of those.
Beat myself up about it once a year for not having finished that game.
It was a game that really, from what I didn't play it, but it's been like on a perpetual sort of like, I need to play the game at some point, just because the kinds of people
it's
that
so
I know
stylish.
That talk about it.
I know you love,
like,
Kingdom Hearts, so I know
I played the first two, so, you know,
it's sort of similar.
I played
hair,
the game.
Spiky hair, fashion.
Belts?
I mean, it is actually kind of similar in belts, in the sense that it's a Square Enix RPG about friendship, about self-doubt, about, like, it's the pitch is very Persona, right? Mm-hmm. People who grew to like Persona 3, 4, and 5 will find something in World Ends With You, because it's that sort of, like, you're in Tokyo, you're in, like, an alternate world Tokyo, where you've been separated from regular people, and you can hear their thoughts and, like, read their phone messages and kind of feel how distant and disconnected everybody is, and the game is very much about you and your friends trying to get back into the real world and confront, like, your self-doubt, your self-loathing, your paranoia about each other, your, like, it's a game about growing up, right? It's a game about, like, going through puberty and going through your teenage years and, like, having to deal with, like, who am I as a person.
It was a game
that has so much style.
People would rage about every couple of years because they made an iPad version of it, and then Square was really bad about updating their games when Apple would be like, hey, you need to, like, I don't know, you know, whatever, you need to update your apps for the new operating system, and Square would just be like, yeah, we're just not, and so these games just aren't going to work on your phone and iPad anymore, and then, like, there'd be just enough, like, rage, they're like, okay, fine,
we'll put the money,
we'll
into
get the engineer
it.
To go update it. So it's cool that, like, being on Switch seems like a great platform.
It looks like the iOS version, and that there's only one screen. Right. I mean, the original
game. Because it was a big, like, it really used the dual screen on the DS. Screens.
You had, like, on your controls, your main character was, or your, I guess your main character you played with the stylus, and you're, like, dashing by, like, slicing across to do a fire attack, or, like, tapping to shoot stuff. You equipped these, like, pins that all give you different attacks, basically. And so you would build out, like, attack combos. You'd be like, tap, tap, tap to shoot the ice thing out, slash to do, like, a fire dash, like, all sorts of, like, slash upwards to do, like, a jump attack. And then on the top, depending on who your partner character was, they all had different ways of interacting, where you would do, like, combos by hitting, like, up, right on the D-pad or something. So you had one hand over there, and you had one hand with the stylus. It was, like, a really cool system. Like, different characters had different setups, basically. And then just, like, I don't think any of that made it into the iOS version, because you just had the one screen.
Right.
So this looks like that, but I didn't look close enough to confirm.
It was on screen for, like, for half 10 seconds. Yeah.
You know, fall. So that's exciting.
Yeah.
Then we finally got to Smash Ultimate. Smash Ultimate with Sakurai.
Welcome to Smash Cast.
Welcome to Smash.
You're big smashers.
I mean, I think ready to smash. Fairly quick, right? Because we got hands-on, which is cool. We can talk about that. But, like, the big picture stuff, it's every character ever in Smash. Which is a good pitch. It's a little bit faster. There's the air dodge. There's perfect blocking.
Well, we fortunately had Kotaku Cecilia.
Cecilia is, like,
she's a Smash expert. And so, like, I was asking her, like, before we're going in, like, what are expectations for this? Like, and then being able to ask her afterwards, like, the air dash was, like, a big deal, right?
We
also that's a huge deal.
And we played with Chelsea Stark and
Alexa. Which I guess we should say the change to the air dash, which I can recognize even as a complete novice and all this stuff to why it's a big change in it's been, I believe, moved back to how it previously used to be, where the air dash was at some point changed to momentum-based. So it's like the dash was in the direction of where your character was going. Now you can just choose the direction of the air dash. So it can both be a way of, like, manipulating another player into thinking you're doing something else, and then also you just have more control over your character, like, generally speaking.
It also definitely helped me get back on the stage a number of times that I would not have normally gotten back on the stage. The 8-player mode is back for, like, goofy fun times.
Yep.
You unlock characters quickly. They said that, like, listen, you're still going to get a small set
you
of characters
with, like,
to start,
eight.
But you're going to quickly unlock them. I still think that there should just be a button combo or something for people who just want to jump in and start playing the way they do it. All the amiibo stuff sounded right. I was just like, hey, if you have a Mario amiibo, it doesn't have to be a fucking Smash a Mario to work with the Mario amiibo stuff here. Just to have the character, it's fine.
One thing, so, like, in a Q&A portion, well, I'll get to mine, but Melee in the GameCube one, there was, like, this really fun single player element to the game. Like, there was stuff to do if you were not just exclusively interested in playing multiplayer, and that stuff just disappeared after that version. And someone did ask if there's gonna be single player content, and their answer was, like, well, all we're talking about today is the multiplayer stuff.
The reveal of Ridley was some real single player looking shit. I don't think it was.
Right.
But, like, if I did that mode, because the reveal of Ridley was Samus, Mario, and Kirby or something.
Luigi, maybe. No? Mega Man.
Walking through, like, Metroid environment. I thought it was the fucking Xenomorph 100%.
I thought it was Star Wars.
What?
It looks like the bridge at the end of Force Awakens when Han Solo goes to confront Kylo Ren.
Right.
So my hope was they're adding Kylo Ren to this game. One of the alt costumes is, like, shirtless Kylo Ren, thirsty Kylo Ren. Come on.
Joins the fight.
Yeah.
I saw the Ripley tail, and I was like, are they adding the fucking Xenomorph? I looked over at you again, I was like, and then it was Ripley, which is cool. Ridley.
Ripley
is from
I called
Alien.
It Ripley originally, and I was like, oh, Ridley.
Ridley. Yeah, Ridley Scott
which,
from Alien.
For folks that aren't familiar with, like, sort of Smash and its history, Ridley's been this character that, like, fans have been demanding to be in the game for more, like, forever, to the point in sort of fan-made versions of Smash where people put in their own characters and do their own balance changes. Ridley has been a character they have hacked into the game. And Nintendo's been actually surprisingly sort of hands off, generally speaking, with sort of, like, the Smash, like, mod and hacking community, kind of just letting the players do their own thing. Like, between the lines, it kind of sounds like if, like, Sakurai is okay with it, you know, or isn't annoyed by it, like, it kind of goes. He has a lot of power over at that company. But whatever the case, Ridley has been this sort of, like, oh, it's a new Smash, Ridley,
right.
And it just doesn't happen.
Right.
And so, like, for a game that seems very, even though they kept positioning this game, their tagline of the game is, like, it's a game for everybody, but, like, the whole presentation of this, all the characters, like the very specific gameplay yeah. changes they're making, this very much feels like a fan celebration of... I'm not saying...
I would say my only pushback on that is that it's a little... It is that. I think that if you are a Smash fan, I suspect seeing stuff like the air dash and the perfect block is exciting because that's mechanic stuff and right. walking through some of the other key stuff. But they spent a lot of time on stuff that those players don't give a fuck about.
Like new Donkey Kong facial animations.
New Donkey Kong facial animations.
Bayonetta's guns have different sounds now.
Totally. Items and assist trophies. Stuff that the like professional Smash players don't ever turn on at all. All sure, that stuff is right, off right, all the time. Right. And that stuff is for me, who like wants to have a goofy fun time and like throw a
Charizard
out.
That's why just these things explode.
Right, exactly. I like the idea of Echo characters. The thing of just like slightly more than a palette swap.
Right. right.
Like Daisy comes out. She plays like Peach, basically, but there's some slight variation.
Right.
Love it. Let's go with it, you know? And we played. And actually, the best thing of the entire day for me was they did – it was Bill Trinan and
– Nate Bulldorf.
Right. From Treehouse doing the live demo for us. And at one point they played, I want to say, the Inkling Kid versus Ridley.
Yes.
And Ridley loses. Inkling Kid wins. I think Bill wins. yeah. And we just get that slow clap of Ridley.
The victory screen where all the characters do the like, oh, good job.
And it's just this fucking pterodactyl demon. Fucking slow clap. Good job.
It's extremely good.
Extremely good. We played, and I think it was good. We all probably won a match between the four of us, and
yes.
and it was a fun time.
It's fine. My level of interest in Smash is pretty low. It's the kind of thing where if I'm at someone's place and people are playing Smash, like I'll sit down and like fuck around with yeah. it. But it's not the kind of thing where I'm going to sit down and like play it on my own. Like I'm just
right.
fighting games have never really been my thing outside of like I spent a decent amount of time like learning Soul Calibur on the Dreamcast and like Dead or Alive 2 also on the Dreamcast.
Yeah, did you catch Soul Calibur 6 at
no
myself? Okay.
No.
I played that.
I like judges. Who's the man? Who's Mitsuri? The creepy? Creepy Voldo. Dude. Yeah. What's Voldo's up, Voldo?
Good. Yoshimitsu. A lot of creepy.
Yoshimitsu is also very good.
Yoshimitsu is good in this. Anyway, played some. You know, two games made by Bandai Namco.
Yeah, true.
Right. Smash, of course, has a real hard Namco touch on it. Like they are lead devs on it, right?
Yeah, they work in collaboration with Sora, which is Sakurai's studio. Right. But you kind of get the sense of, like the main like engineering efforts happen right. at Namco, and then like the design stuff comes from Sora. No Star Fox.
No Star Fox Adventure game.
Right.
Star Fox in Smash.
Yes. Star Fox in Smash. Yeah. Yes, no. Yes. But no
Star Wolf in Smash.
The long rumored like Star Fox Racing game that Retro was supposed to be working on, which was reported by lots of very credible sources: yeah. Eurogamer, yep. Kotaku.
Yep.
That just didn't show up. Maybe that's somewhere else.
Metroid.
No Metroid.
No Yoshi.
No
Animal Crossing.
Someone asked about Metroid or about Yoshi and asked if it's still in development. And they said, yes, stay tuned later this year. So that game may be like an early 2019 thing that we could just get on a different direct.
Right. They're remaking GameCube controllers and adapters, which I know is a big deal.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people need those and they're limited supply.
Smash is also coming December 7th, which makes it sound like, yo, this game is coming at like super fucking hot. Like
super hot. They want to make holiday.
But December 7th is, and you can see it like slip in a week
yeah.
or here's something.
Here's a good thing about that is their online service launches in September, which
right.
means there's going to be months for them to work.
Time to play, time to pay to play Splatoon 2 online, even though you've been doing it for free.
I wish they'd shown more of the Splatoon 2 DLC stuff.
Yeah.
I guess they did that event.
They should just let you
bit.
Play that game for free. Like, this is for new games.
Yeah.
This is
going forward.
Right.
Or they should make Splatoon 2 free. And you pay for the service. If you pay for the service, you get Splatoon 2 for free.
Sure, whatever. Either way, it's not cool to start charging for an online service that doesn't give you like you don't. It's not like you get native voice chat on the Switch.
No.
You're still using their
yep.
their shitty
it's
app
shitty.
And or using Discord or Skype.
Yep. My last note on this entire event is that during the Smash stuff when they were developing, they showed the new Breath of the mm-hmm. Wild stage. That song still fucks me all the way up. It like makes me like it chokes me up. Like genuinely, the Breath of the Wild main theme, I get like in my feelings on that. That's how much I love that game. It's like so rare for me. Not to get emotional. I get emotional
yeah,
all the time,
yeah.
but for a video game to have
right.
that sort of lasting like
to evoke something that far away from it.
Exactly. Like if they had announced new Breath of the Wild content, they'd be like, oh yeah, like Breath of the Wild Majora's Mask, that would have gotten me bad. You would have seen me like,
head in the hands.
Like sad, like ugly crying. You know what I mean? Which is like exciting for me as a person to have that in my life.
I asked one question, which is like, you know, the direct, you know, when everyone watches it, you'll notice like there's a long sections that are like very specific sort of gameplay tweaks and like showing like you know, changes they made to sort of like a stamina system for dashing, showing frame by frame, like how a character slows down if you like keep dashing in place. So I thought, you know, one of my, I recovered a lot of Mario Maker for Kotaku.
No Mario Maker.
I knew that was not going to happen. I think that game is next year. And I'll be excited to see. It makes me excited because this Smash seems like Smash, like a half step. Like it's a Smash 4. I think it's a Smash 4. So this seems like a Cecilia Smash at Kotaku. Yeah, it's 4.
5.
No, it's 4.5. That's what I'm saying.
Oh.
Yeah. Yes. Like when Cecilia, like I was talking to her about, she said, yeah, this seems like a 4.5.
And yeah,
then, like,
I gotcha.
In a couple of years, there'll be like the true Smash sequel that, like, it would make sense. Like, here are all the characters you've ever loved.
Right.
This is, in some ways, a goodbye to, like, exactly. This is to this era of Smash. And then whatever they do next, they would be free to start making, like, more dramatic
changes. Yeah.
Because then they could finally say, like, we're giving you back, like, different the ways Air Dead used to work. Like, we brought back every character. Like, Snake's here. Hooray.
Oh, the most ambitious
crossover. Ice Climbers are back.
The most ambitious crossover of all time. Yeah. I almost wanted to go further with that stuff. I almost wanted to be like, all right, do you want this game to play like Brawl? Do you want to play like Melee? What do you want to play like? Like, you can just tick the box and the physics change. I know it doesn't work like that,
right?
But it would be cool if it did.
Yeah. But yeah. So anyway, the question I asked about was like something I was very irritating for Mario Maker, where they would put out a patch and like the line in the patch notes would just say, you know, general gameplay changes for a smoother and more enjoyable experience or some bullshit like that. They did that for Smash too, and then it was incumbent on the community to figure out like what the hell changed.
Yeah.
And it's just in an era where just like where then you go to wikis and it's like, oh, you know, like this value changed by 5 or however the community measures it. It just seems like something you can just tell people.
Just tell me.
And so I asked, you know, was there any thought given the way this Direct like was talking very specifically about some of these minutiae, like, you know, could you just put out proper patch notes in the future instead of relying on the community to figure out themselves? And their response was that they leave it on developer by developer basis on like instituting that stuff. It seems like actually the status quo is that they just don't release any information, because like I can't remember, I don't know a game that actually of theirs that actually does get that specific. But one thing I did actually believe when they said that Mr. Sakurai like pays very close attention to the community and what they're saying and like weighs all that stuff. The argument they made for Smash Brothers not having specifics on that was that actually the team enjoys watching the community figure out what's changed and their reactions to it when they're discovering it, as opposed to having an immediate guttural reaction to a change for a change's sake.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually do think there's probably
similar.
Some people
have made that argument. Titanfall team made that argument. Titanfall 2 team made that argument. And I think they ended up
backstepping it. There's a middle ground, right?
Right.
Like if it was just like changes made to Ridley's Air Dash, whatever, you know, like something that like at least gives you a sense of like, oh, here's where the changes occurred.
Yeah.
I'll see how I feel about there. So anyway, they said basically no, but that was a question I asked. So,
all right, we should take a break and then come back and talk about Sekiro, the wolf.
Tenchu.
Sekiro means wolf, apparently.
Oh.
We're going to take a break. We're going to take a real break because we have to go watch a different press conference.
Yeah.
Then we're going to come back and talk about the wolf. Talk about Shadowside twice.
All right.
So we will be right back.
A lot can happen in 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Welcome back to one of our Day Zero podcasts, not our only Day Zero.
Day
Z.
Welcome to our Day Z podcast.
Wow, our Day Z podcast.
Yeah.
I got killed on the beach in Day Z.
I'm hiding in the woods. I don't have food, but I got one bottle of water and a gun.
Someone's captured me. I respawned on the beach and they captured me immediately and they're marching me through the woods. Save me, Patrick. You can hear my footsteps. What do you do?
I've used the bullet on myself. Good luck.
Wow, dark. Speaking of dark things, we saw another game from Dark Souls creator From Software, director Miyazaki.
We know this. You said you Googled this, or there was discussion of it.
Google me, Chuck. That's what Miyazaki said. Charles Barkley hates Dark Souls. And Miyazaki was like, Google me, Chuck.
Hey, Siri. What was the thing from earlier? Aqua got Norded.
Directed by Hidetaka Miyazaki, Sekiro: Shadows Die Twice is a third-person action-adventure
game. I don't believe it.
With RPG elements.
How did he direct Bloodborne and Dark Souls 3 and this game?
Dark Souls 3 was 2016.
Uh-huh.
2015, 2016, somewhere in there.
The year after Bloodborne.
Yeah. Shrug. I'm shrugging. You can't see it at home. It was 2 years after
Bloodborne. I feel like this is creative director... quote unquote.
Yeah, I guess it was a year after Bloodborne.
Is this like John Lasseter at Pixar is like creative of all of Pixar?
I believe he directed I believe he directed Bloodborne and this.
And that Bloodborne or then Dark Souls 3 was just sort of like my hand is on your shoulder.
Right.
We'll get there.
We'll get there.
That was like the Dark Souls 2 team making Dark Souls 3.
Right. That's my
I just want to know.
Theory. I'd love to know too. I mean, whatever, because we saw this. We went and saw Behind Closed Door demo.
During the Microsoft press conference.
Right, like seconds after they debuted the game. Sekiro: Shadows Die Twice was originally teased at Paris Games Week, which was big, right?
Game Awards.
Oh, it was Game Awards. You're right. Sorry. Game Awards. Otherwise, it would have been at Sony, almost certainly. Right. It was Activision published.
Yep.
From Software, working with a new publisher for the first time. They've worked with a bunch.
Activision, as a choice, both from... Less from Software working with a big third-party publisher, more that Activision choosing to want to make some of this, given that, like, if you look at Activision as a company, you would think, like, oh, they're looking for the next big thing, right? Like, this game could be big, but this is more along the lines of when they were making games like Prototype and stuff like that, right? Like, I think this game is a lot better than Prototype, but what I'm saying is it's there's less exploitation, games as a service, like the things that are very successful for... actors right now, Call of Duty, Hearthstone, Diablo, World of Warcraft. Like there's a thematic business like DNA going through all of those games, and this game does not fit that at all.
This game isn't multiplayer. That's one of the things that they talked about. We'll have to like walk through some of this stuff because there's a lot to go through. But one of them is no PvP, no summoning people. As far as
invasions,
no invasions. No multiplayer stuff at all versus Dark Souls versus Bloodborne, where we've seen some very notable duels in which Natalie took on an invader. It was very good. Let's walk through what this game is.
Yes.
All right. So it is a third person action game.
Yes.
It looks
not called Tenchu.
Isn't it?
Well, I feel like.
What's Tenchu mean?
It's a game that From Software worked on. I don't know that Tenchu I know like distilled the essence of Tenchu. You're a ninja. This game is also a ninja.
Right. Okay. In Japanese, Tenchu means divine retribution, which is a great fucking...
That is. You could just call this Tenchu divine retribution.
Sekiro
means... Or just call it divine retribution. That's a good name for a video game.
Sekiro means wolf, apparently.
Sure.
And you play as a character named Sekiro, or like the role, he's a wolf. You are playing as a character, so it's a big distinction already. You're playing as a specific person who is like a ninja servant to... the young lord, who is like a young...
He's been kidnapped?
Lord who's been kidnapped by a cult, by an ancient Japanese, not ancient Japanese, a medieval Japanese cult. It takes place in the 1500s. It takes place during the Warring States period, the Sengoku era, which is like if you've played Onimusha or Samurai Warriors. Have you ever heard of Oda Nobunaga, Nobunaga's Ambition? That's that era.
He's not in here, though. Someone did ask that.
Yeah, so well, they said it in the intro. That was also one of those questions where they shouldn't have fucking asked it because they already addressed it.
Right.
It's like they said, no historical people are in this game.
Right.
Mitsuhide isn't going to show up. Hattori Hanzo from this period, not going to show up. This is in that setting, and the way that they talked about
it's an aesthetic,
right? Which is like, why is there so much death in the world? Oh, because it's in the middle of a civil war. So you have these like long battlefields filled with the flags, the banners, slammed into the ground, and the bodies, and blah blah blah. So that does present a sort of context for it, but it's an original story, original characters, not connected to Dark Souls or Bloodborne or Demon Souls, a new publisher, right?
Yep.
And so the ownership there makes that. Certainly talked a lot about blood. Certainly there is some fun overlap stuff. We were just talking about that before we started recording.
And design-wise, you look at this and immediately, this is a From Software action game. They now have a template in which they move parts around. They change things through. But if you've played one of these, like a lot of things are going to be familiar.
Right.
But similar to the leap from Dark Souls to Bloodborne.
Right.
Like there's a similar leap from Bloodborne to this game in which like... If you're going to come in with some familiarity, you're going to be rewarded for a general understanding of kind of the combat flow, but they are going to punish you and push you to play in a completely,
different way. It seems like it's cutting the middle between the two styles, the Dark Souls and the Bloodborne styles in interesting ways. So you're going to find your kidnapped master, and to do that, you have to fight a bunch of other samurai and monsters,
and also hide around a corner with an old Japanese woman.
Oh, she got stabbed,
looking real nice, and they're like, "Don't worry, we're going to slit her throat, but she would ring a bell, and other bad guys would come here." So
she's part of the evil cult who wants to sacrifice.
There was like in Bloodborne, there's a creepy old woman, but like she transforms into a grotesque
this
creature.
Just a lady
this is
the
just
bell.
An old woman that you just
You're
slit
a ninja.
Her throat.
Ninjas aren't good people.
Sure, yeah.
I guess. You know. I mean, they saw another one of those. It was, I don't know if it was her or it was another character model who absolutely rung a bell on you, which speaks to something else. There's some light stealth in this game. We're like really walking through. We should just paint the picture that they painted for us to some degree.
Sure. Paint
Start
away.
on this overhanging tree limb and jump off of it and like hook onto another tree limb with a grappling hook. There's a jump button in this game.
Yep.
If you hit X, you jump, or A on a...
And I guess if like left, right, you kind of do like a... You dodge jump.
There's a dodge
jump.
Right, like versus. There's also a dodge button. There's also like literally
those separate buttons.
Like on the Xbox 360 or Xbox One controller, it looked like he was hitting a button to do a side dodge, and then a different button that is just like a jump button.
Okay.
Like there was moments in his fight where he was hitting A to do like a backwards jump, which is like it looked like a character action game in that way.
Right. Right.
Jumps off this tree limb, uses his prosthetic.
That weird bone. That weird wooden bone arm thing is a
which
like,
is from that original teaser. Is like a cyborg arm.
Basically.
Right.
It's an excuse to give you a bunch of different tools.
Right. And so like use that to do a grappling hook, grapples over, sees a lone samurai guard, and then does a stealth attack and kills that samurai guard.
Yeah.
Rolls up to another samurai, gets into a fight, but ends it really quickly. It was kind of hard to see. There was no HUD on the screen during our demo.
Right.
And so there will be a HUD in the game, they said.
They said they're just working on it.
Just working on it.
Like you're not going to be able to grapple everywhere. Like in the UI, there will be elements that like, help
right.
suggest to you like
suggest
where
you
where you can grapple onto.
Totally.
But it was weird to watch the demo because for a moment you're like,
how did he see that tree?
Yeah, and it's like, well,
oh, there's
he
be
built this game and he knows where those grapple points are.
Exactly. So there was stealth more than just a backstab. Like jumped off a roof and then like landed Tenchu style with a sword and stabbed this person in the neck. And then when combat starts, you know, against this other lone samurai, it becomes very clear that this is a different style of combat than what we've seen from software. It is, like I said, kind of in the middle between the more defensive Dark Souls stuff and the more aggressive Bloodborne stuff.
Right. As the character speed of Bloodborne.
100%.
But even more defensive than, like, so Dark Souls... Like the defense end of Dark Souls, like the like sort of like stereotypical like sword and shield, like turtle. That was the game didn't push you into that. That's just what a lot of players adopted to survive.
You could be an active player who ran an agility build and rolled around.
Right.
And
you had out, but it was for a lot of people. If that was their first like approach to this game, that was like a way to get through that
I'm
game.
Get a shield that can block 100% of incoming damage, and I'm going to sword or spear,
and then I'm going to roll out of the way and poke you in the back.
Right, exactly. So for this. You can hold down a trigger.
There's
or something.
No shield.
There's no shield
that in the demo we saw.
Right,
at least.
Exactly. It's kind
of
like,
my guess is there's no shield at all. Would be my
no, because the whole point of the game is so the way they explain the combat, you can hold up your katana to block incoming attacks, but you have a posture meter. Or they're calling it posture right now. That might change.
It's stamina in a different context.
It's a stamina in a different context. It only drops when you block attacks, and only when you fail to perfectly parry the attacks. They were saying that, like, you hit the button to parry. They showed us. You hit the button to parry. There's a flash of light, and your blade kind of counters the other blade in exactly the right way, and you can open them up for a counterattack, right? And the way that that's different is, like, you're constantly in parry mode, in a sense, right? You want to be getting that parry to keep your posture meter up.
Or keeping, like, the aggression on the other person because you actually don't lose posture.
Right.
When you attack. So you can spam away, at that point you're pushing a person back into a corner and dropping their posture before they get that parry and hopefully flip it around on you. Right. And that's where like the dynamic of like the they described like combat in a holistic sense as a clash of swords.
That's basically
what combat
blades.
Like the DNA of this game's approach to combat, and it's a lot of
so
defensive posture.
Cool
it's a lot it's, of being like panic anxiety inducing, like someone is pressing on you and you need to find a way to press back on them.
Yes. You know, I've said this before during streams of Bloodborne and stuff like that, that one of my favorite things in games is, like, I love the big bosses of these games, of the FromSoft games, but I do really love the duels, the feeling of, like, I'm matching someone who is just like me. And the clashing of blades, the sort of katanas smashing against each other and having these flashes, not historically accurate. Who the fuck cares? It looks cool.
Yeah.
It looks like samurai films. It looks like anime. It looks like the depiction of what a samurai fight looks like, or a ninja in a samurai fight.
It's why one of my favorite bosses in the whole Soul series, Bloodborne included, is... from Demon's Souls, where it's in the time. It's the horror themed area from Demon's Souls. I don't know.
Tower of Latria.
Yes, uh-huh. And where the boss at the end of that is like it summons another player,
the monk, the monk with the cool head thing.
Right, and it summons another player in the world, and you have to defeat another. You have to. You could have avoided invasions.
Yes, the
whole game, like gotten around that stuff. And as long as you can unplug the game, and then it just spawns a random NPC.
Fake invasion. But
like the brilliance of that battle is like, hey, like even if you've avoided this stuff all along, like you're gonna have to fight another player to get through this.
Right.
And that's a really cool moment.
And the combat in this all has that really high stakes feeling. You can heal. You have tools, other tools.
There's an Estus Flask.
There's an Estus Flask equivalent. In fact, you also have like. We don't know if it's an Estus Flask equivalent because we don't know how you get it back. You don't know if it's
how the resources are managed. It's either.
What we do know is
I hope it's never do the Bloodborne thing again.
Please,
I don't want to farm.
You do one thing is that you can find like item usage or like I forget the ninja prosthetic, which is what they're calling that arm, has tools, and they a lot of them feel like the switch weapons from Bloodborne.
Yes.
Where they have multiple modes. Or where like you're doing something with one and then cannon moving in with a katana attack. So
like you're throwing a bunch of shurikens at someone to like break out of their posture and then quickly hitting like R1, your regular attack, and like that triggers a special combo where like you dash forward and then get a quick hit on them.
You could switch that from the shurikens to a big axe that will break an enemy's shield and open them up, and then you switch to R1 or whatever the light attack is, and then zoom in and it'll hit. And that stuff seemed cool. There's like a flamethrower one that Bloodborne had that like handheld flamethrower thing. There's one there where like I saw them use it to like just do an AoE attack to get some space, and then I saw them like set their fucking sword on fire. And the thing that was interesting is they were using the same resource for all of that stuff. They were saying like, oh, it's the same, like that's the thing. I mean, who knows? That could change for sure. But it's like you have ninja tools or whatever, and like those ninja tools come from a pool. What else? It's beautiful. I think we saw that initial trailer and we're like, and that's a FromSoft game. Those faces look like FromSoft.
Yeah, there's like a certain like aesthetic to their enemy designs that immediately screams, oh.
Yes.
Something about the hair specifically, like on their enemies. There's just something about it. They're like, oh, right. Okay. That's a From game.
But there's this incredible contrast, which you brought up in a question to them that was about one of the things that they want to focus on is like the beauty of nature, the Japanese nature, like the scene of Japan in the 1500s, you know,
like big trees and flowers,
etc. And it was so striking to see FromSoft make something so beautiful.
Because their games are beautiful, but there's like a dark ugliness to the beauty that they create, and
those spaces used to be beautiful. You can imagine what Yharnam looked like.
You're there after.
You can imagine what, you know, Honor Londo starts really beautiful and golden and then becomes this corrupted place. And here, the corruption is the people, almost, or the monsters, right? Like
really danced around like sort of like what's going on here, but there's some sort of rot. There's some sort of mystery, like which there's a cult. That's all we know about like sort of like the general antagonist, like the larger sort of threat.
There's a bit where they talk about
There's a
giant snake. They talk about
a giant snake.
Sacrifice the young lord's eyes or burn them or something. It was dark. It was, you know, it's FromSoft.
Yeah.
There's some cool combo things that we saw where like they were jumping off the back of enemies. They were like, it seemed very fast. There were times when it sounded like what they were trying to emphasize was you're playing a ninja. You're not playing a knight. You're not playing a samurai. You're playing a ninja, and ninjas are fast, and ninjas take risks. And one of the biggest ways that they're encouraging taking risks is
the resurrection mechanic.
Right.
So when you die,
shadows die twice.
Yeah. So they're very specific in saying part of the reason they weren't explaining very much about how this works because they said it's like in flux. It's like something they're still figuring out.
Right.
But the basic way it works is that you die and you come back some number of times. They would not tell us like whether those are consequences, if that's something that you have any agency over. Like, hey, if I choose not to die, I get to keep something. Like,
it's not that they weren't telling you. It's that they said like we're still in depth.
Yeah,
like,
they're not
still
testing
some things out.
Right. When I asked, I tried to frame the question in a way that like didn't put them on sort of a defensive posture, but it was like, you know, there are a lot of people who are attracted to the worlds of From Software games, of the stories in From Software games, but find the combat and the difficulty to be like a tough hill to climb.
Right.
And so my thought was like, is this sort of a response to that, to like, hey, give players an opportunity where if they make a mistake, that rather than having to start a battle over, like they can kind of just jump back in, which is why I was asking maybe there was a risk reward part.
Right.
So it's like, hey, for this kind of gives like novice players like another chance to get in the fight, but like you're not going to get as many resources if you win or whatever. Right, or and something. Like that'd be like some way of handling
but instead,
it. And then, instead, they pushed back and said, one, we're like very specific, like, no, this game is going to be just as challenging as our previous entries. In fact, we expect people to die more often mm-hmm. because we are building in a mechanic where you can come back. And instead, they pitched it as something where you're going to – they want players to take more risks.
Right.
They want players to like decide to do something that in a previous Souls game, they would go, like I'm going to die if I do that. Well, now, well, if you die, it's okay. Like right. you're going to come back and you have another shot. And when you die for whatever reason – the people here don't know that you can.
Right. They're like,
and so
right.
it resets like
they
the idle animations of yeah. these enemies. And so like they show this one battle with like yeah, you saw it in the trailer, like the big like beast with like the wood around his head.
Right.
And some smaller minions and like in the demo we saw, like the player died.
Twice.
They start yeah, twice. He didn't mean to do that.
Yeah.
Walked away, and those enemies start walking away. So then you can come up and like start doing a backstab right. and like really go to
drop
town.
One of the minions that right. opens up the main fight to be a little more focused for you.
Right.
Which like whether or not that's their intention of making it easier for some folks. So we won't know unless we know what the resurrection stuff looks like, right?
Right.
Because if it's resource gated and you only have three of those things or seven, like five, like, they're like healing items and they're
right.
rare. Then
I mean, all
From
games deal with resources
you.
And manage resources. Right. So my, you know. There's probably still figuring out the balance there and where that falls, but it is my guess is it is something in which you're going to have to be thinking about when you use these, and there is probably some sort of equivalent of a bonfire where like that stuff gets refreshed
right.
or some way.
But they
where,
did
like,
say they want to get rid of the flow, or they want to try something new besides like going from boss to boss to boss linear.
Still
flow.
Fog gates.
Still are there still fog gates?
Oh yeah, I saw fog gate. I noted that.
We saw
that.
a ninja wall. Remember. Like goes
no, when you get when in the demo when they got to the boss,
oh, was there really a fog gate?
Fog, yeah, no,
I wrote
fog gate. Good. Check.
Okay. Well, you walk through that fog gate, and it's that beautiful.
But it's like Bloodborne. It's a fog gate that appears once the encounter begins. You don't,
oh, I see. You get locked in with the fog.
Yeah.
Gate. You don't walk through the fog.
Yeah.
Gate.
Bloodborne got rid of the fog gate, telling you a boss was arriving. The
I
fog
see.
Gate just there
right.
locks you in.
Yes.
They still have the fog gate.
Yes.
So it's a different fog.
Different
gate.
Different fog gate. That fight, that boss fight. We saw a boss fight against something called like. I want to say they called them the Corrupted Monk or
yes,
something
that's
like
right,
that.
That's right.
Which was this like giant like humanoid.
Siren.
But like, yeah.
Creature.
That had, I wrote down that the layers of clothing over the armor looked really good. The like layers of like robes. But you could still tell that there was like bulky armor underneath that.
Right.
And also their head was in a weird place. It was a weird.
It was like a very
cool,
elegant
big
boss.
Big like spear
like,
fight.
Like a lot of the movement was like very pretty, like
yeah,
for lack of a
but
better
also
word.
Also clearly if you like, you would catch these glimpses of that character's face and be like, yo, her face
yeah.
is fucked up. Or like something
There
weird.
Also appears to be the equivalent of the visceral attack from Bloodborne. Like there were moments where an enemy would be bowed over, like
oh,
in
yeah.
a sort of.
I think
of,
that's their posture being broken.
Right, and then so then, but then specifically, what ends up happening is like you do this sort of thing in Bloodborne, where like you grab the character,
yes.
you stab them, you hear like the
yeah.
like that sort of attack seems to have.
What was that? What do you hear? Okay, yeah, that's right.
That's the sound of a sword going into. A
yes.
human.
I keep coming back to how beautiful that area was and
yeah.
how. They take that away from you in the middle of that fight, right? There's like the cherry blossoms everywhere. The cherry blossoms are not only everywhere, they're on the bridge that you're fighting on.
Right.
And they like as the attacks come through, they get swept up into the air, into the wind and stuff. And then fog like sets in at another stage of that boss fight, and everything just kind of goes dark. And she's like coming out of the fog to attack. And then our guy got killed again, the third our demo.
Well, that was probably planned at that point.
That one was probably planned.
But yeah, I actually think it's a really interesting aesthetic choice for them to do something where all their games before this in the Soul series have sort of found like beauty in death and body
right,
horror.
Right.
And there's certainly an element to that. But I like the contrast of
yeah.
like the world around you is gorgeous, but it's the people in it that
right.
are the rot. And
right.
that's like it potentially sets up some really interesting thematic choices
sure.
for like the story. We didn't see any of that. Right. So we don't
no,
know.
Not any more than the demo, the trailer. That
but I was saying, like we didn't
yeah.
no encounters with NPCs, no encounters
no
with any sort of talking or storytelling. Like I'm curious if they'll do if they're making a break from other conventions
mm-hmm.
at one, you know, will they make any breaks there? They did say like one of the breaks in terms of like the world structure was, it's hard to know exactly what this will mean, but the way they pitched it was rather than like you said, rather than just boss to boss, they want you to have options.
Yeah.
And so but you do often have options in Dark Souls and Bloodborne where you could, like, go a couple of different ways.
Neo, the other feudal samurai Souls-type game in which you just have literally a map of missions to go do.
Right.
Where, like, some of those are what, in a boss fight. Some of them won't. They'll just be running through this level backwards.
Undoubtedly that specific because they're so committed to sort of, like, an organic connected world.
Right. I mean,
world.
They open this demo by pointing to a castle and saying you can go to there. But, right. Like, in a less
But we don't know. Like, if you finish that, then do you go to a map? I doubt it. I think it's all still connected in some way, but I wonder if they're going to kind of straddle between those two things where, I don't know. They were not talking about it. And the game's not that far off. So, I mean,
early 2019. February. Come on. They can't be.
So that game's probably, it's either January or March.
Right. Or it slips and it's...
It's April or May.
April or May. I could see it being May.
They're pretty good about hitting the release dates. From doesn't delay.
You're right.
But all these games on February 22nd, now it's just a game of chicken. They're like, who's going to move?
Who's going to flinch?
Someone's going to move. You know who's going to move? Crackdown's going to move.
Crackdown's going to move.
Anthem's going to move.
Yeah, Anthem's going to move. But the thing is, like, that they're still one of the big ones, right?
And also
Red Dead this year or next year? I've already forgotten.
It's October.
Okay.
That's why there's, like, no games this fall.
It was going to be this year. And then
yes,
it got pushed.
It's supposed to be this spring.
It's supposed to be
last fall.
Right. Not FromSoft.
No.
Rockstar is not FromSoft.
No. And I think they'll probably hit that. And that said, FromSoftware is big enough to throw, like, they can go settle where they want, and they're going to be A-OK.
This is another one of those instances of...
I also don't know what Activision's expectations are for this fucking game.
I'm really curious.
I have zero, like, I cannot wait for a quarterly call I want to hear Bobby Kotick talk about this fucking game and explain how does this fit within their portfolio, because it doesn't.
It's cool. Here's how it fits in their portfolio. Everyone in the room we were in was like jaw.
We're not talking shit about an Activision game.
Right. We're talking like we got texts that were like, you have to take this Activision appointment. It's cool as shit.
We're telling other people, make sure you go take this thing.
Right.
Yeah.
Which is a rare thing for us. There was something about just seeing it move, this blend of speed, which again, Bloodborne was fast, but it was still deliberate and still kind of slow pace as you're claustrophobic. Let's talk about that. Bloodborne is a claustrophobic game in a lot of spaces, in a lot of ways. Dark Souls tends to have a few more big open areas with like really wide, you look down and you can see all the different directions you can go and stuff like that. But especially early Bloodborne, very claustrophobic, like alleyways and you know, elbow turns inside of a city and blah, blah, blah. Here, we see something that is really wide open, not only horizontally, but vertically.
Yep.
Lots of jumping up onto buildings, lots of using our grappling hook to go over to trees. There was stuff where the player that we were watching didn't go over, but there was like clearly some side stuff that they could have gone off to go do. Going into what looked like optional areas inside of a building, you know.
Ledges are a big thing where sounds like you can manipulate those and you can drop down from them. It's not like
or
an automated thing.
Up from them or whatever. Right. Yeah. That stuff was all really cool. And then just to like reiterate, one of the things I'm so excited about is them, and this puts it in conversation again with Anthem and with Fallout 76, of like, here's a team that we know they do one thing. They want to do a different thing. They want to try a different thing. This is a game where you don't create your own character, and their thinking behind that is explained to us. First of all, they don't explain this publicly. That's their strategy. Anthem's BioWare strategy is to just kind of like assume that their core fan base will follow them and take the risk. The Bethesda is like, we're going to slowly unfold how the new thing is like the old thing. From is just like not even talking about it in this way necessarily. But what is interesting to me about it is they are at least explaining what their thoughts are as to why they're going in this direction to us. And so what they said was, we want to do a single player game, one, because then we don't have to worry about multiplayer balancing, which means like, you know, if you're making Dark Souls 3, if you're making Bloodborne, you know it is going to have PvP in it, which means you know that you need to make sure that magic and strength builds and faith builds and dexterity builds and all the various builds actually are balanced enough to play together. And they're saying we don't have to worry about any of that stuff.
And they wouldn't explain how character customization happens, like build customization happens. They said they wanted to get away from stats.
Yeah.
So my interpretation of that was that it's not going to be like dropping points in the strength and dex and all that stuff. But they said there will be customization, there will be upgrades. Yeah. They just weren't talking about how that works.
Lots of new
skill trees. My guess is it's skill trees.
Maybe. It might just be gear. It might just be...
Sure. But gear that acts as like skill trees, basically.
Right. Where it's like you have three different... Again, I just looked it up. It's the Shinobi prosthetic, not the ninja prosthetic.
Aha.
It's different.
Shinobi's cooler.
Yeah, Shinobi's cooler. You know... You can choose up to three different shinobi prosthetics, and there's a list of 15 or something.
Right, right.
And then different types of like swords or main hand weapons or whatever it is. There's places to do that, right? I can see in which you could still have character build customization without having the full, like, yeah, how many points in poise do I need or whatever.
And in some ways, I would like the, like, it'd be cool if you can be, like, respecting your character in that way. Like, you can halfway through, like, change, like, how your character functions in a way that Dark Souls and Bloodborne made it kind of frustrating. You gotta start over.
Yeah, totally. So we'll see. I'm super excited about it.
Yeah,
we both said ahead of time that we wanted them to take a new direction. This isn't Mech Souls, but it's cool.
But what we're doing is we're crossing off a list.
Right.
And it's like, we got Ninja Souls.
Yeah.
We're working our way to Mecha Souls.
Yes, yes, yes. Miyazaki also, by the way, he's directing Mecha Souls. He told me. He said, hey, Austin. I love mechs and souls. So
cool.
There's a platinum game that got debuted at the Square thing yesterday.
Binary
Domain.
It's
not that.
I don't remember what it was called.
I don't remember what it was called.
I wrote on in my notes, it says, brutally murder old lady, parentheses, she's evil.
She was. Well, she was.
That's what they told us.
She was Babylon's Fall. Thank you. That one didn't have mechs in it necessarily, but it had a big knight robot looking thing.
It felt soulsy.
I had a vibe. Platinum's making it. It's not going to be Mech Souls, but it would be cool if it was.
Sure.
Someone make me that game, please.
Well, it's called The Surge, and it's just okay.
That didn't. You weren't in a mech. You had a.
In the spectrum, it was closer.
It's closer. It didn't have the thing that's cool about these games, which is like the lore and like the. There's a vibe of history to the Souls games, the Bloodborne, that is so valuable in place setting and like literally setting the table and making it feel like
right.
Hey, there has been people have been here. There's stuff for you to look over.
Right.
And that stuff is so important.
We'll see. They're making another surge. We'll see where that goes.
Yeah, totally. That's true. That's fair. All right. I think that's going to do it for us.
Yeah.
We will be back. We'll probably have another podcast that hit last night that you may not have heard yet, because that will be the one in which we talked about
Ubisoft,
PC,
Square Enix. PC gaming show,
which is happening now, which you have to go watch.
Square Enix.
We'll talk about it in that one. Never mind. I was going to talk about something. We'll talk about it in that one. Square Enix and
PlayStation.
Sony. So that'll be that's in the feed. It's before this one. Go listen to that if you haven't listened to that yet. Thanks for hanging out. Austin Walker on Twitter. Austin_Walker on Twitter. Patrick.
You got it.
Patrick Klepek on Twitter. Waypoint on Twitter. Also, we will be back later tonight for our day one podcast.
I feel like I'm confused.
We are in a weird place. We found games in a strange place.
Just stop.
Thank you, Joel. All right, we'll be back tonight with more. Peace.